Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for March 19th, 2017. I'm your host, David McLaughlin. Joining me always, welcome, Catherine Smith.
Greetings from Atlanta.
And welcome, Tim Shiflett.
Good evening, sir.
Yes, and tonight, just to kind of preview, about 20 minutes, Lowell Feld of Blue, Virginia, he's going to be our guest. Lowell, in addition to covering Virginia politics, has really been doing an outstanding job on a lot of national stuff on his Twitter feed. So we're going to talk a little national and Virginia politics here in about 20 minutes into the podcast with Lowell. But until then, we're going to get international. And, you know, Donald Trump is always going to make news, be it domestic or foreign. And this week, he had one of the most important world leaders, maybe the longest serving, most important world leader from Europe, Angela Merkel, from Germany's chancellor. She came to the White House for a state visit, and they talked. Apparently, there was a lot of talk about how much of the defense budget Germany should pay for, and Donald Trump obviously came, or he didn't obviously, but he came up with a number that Germany thought was more than it should be. But then an optics issue arose when, after they talked, they went into, I believe it's the East Room, Tim, correct me if I'm wrong, and where they usually have the pictures. People take them for all the papers around the world. And instead of, like with the Japanese prime minister, the extra long handshake that then led to the eye roll, there was no handshake between Chancellor Merkel and Donald Trump. Catherine, any idea, you know, what led to that? Why did Donald Trump play this so differently than he did with Shinzo Abe or Abe?
Well, we know from a long time ago that he does not like to shake hands. He's a germaphobe, and he does not like to shake hands. So I don't think it's unusual that he would not shake. I mean, it's obviously a slight and a, you know, ridiculous practice to not shake hands with a world leader. But I wasn't surprised by it, because we've heard that, you know, prior to being in politics, he did not shake hands. Like, it was one of his things. Like, he just didn't shake hands. But I think, I mean, you know, I tend to jump to conclusions. I don't know if it has had anything to do with her being a woman, or if, you know, he was just feeling curmudgeonly and didn't want to do it, or whatever, feeling like his, you know, the germaphobe in him just couldn't do it. But it was, you know, kind of obvious and embarrassing for our country, I think. But I wasn't surprised.
And I didn't. I mean, obviously there's things that Donald Trump has said, particularly on a bus with Billy Bush, that would not lead you to believe that he's such a germaphobe, the way he talked about,
well, but that,
you know,
that
touching
was one
other
of his
people.
Arguments. That was one of his arguments why
stupid.
That was a ridiculous thing to say, is because everybody knows he's a germaphobe.
Well, then why did he say it?
I know.
And then he shook hands
exactly.
So long,
yeah.
That's
Japanese
the first
prime
thing minister.
He has to determine he's an idiot. So we move on from, we go from there, and then
yeah. I mean, there's just so many levels of things going on here, and it just seemed, you know, so off-putting in that long extended thing. And when you watch it in video, I do realize that it was meant for still photography. So watching it with video is not, I guess, exactly how it's supposed to play out. But it just – it was so strange. It seemed like he could shake hands quickly as soon as the, you know, picture's taken. He moves out of that room, go get his Germex, and,
yeah, I know.
You know, slathering on. Tim, what do you make of this event?
Is this the point at where I correct you, like?
Yes, the room. The room. I can't keep up.
No. If you look behind you in that picture, you see a mantle, fireplace. All that. That's the Oval Office.
That's the Oval Office they were sitting in.
Yes, that's the Oval Office they were sitting in. Now, Sean Spicer, why does he end up getting into this, saying something bizarre? And the bizarre thing he said this time was he doesn't think that Trump heard her ask him that. Because he said, well, they shook hands at the entrance, and there was a lot of hubbub and a lot of people milling around, and German media kind of blasted it because it looked awkward, didn't it?
It did look awkward, yes.
Yeah. And, of course, he had to tweet. You know, despite what you heard from the fake news, Trump said, I had a great meeting with German Chancellor Angela Merkel. And then he had to throw in a dig at them, you know. Nevertheless, Germany owes vast sums of money to NATO, and the United States must be paid more for the powerful and very expensive defense it provides to Germany. He followed that by, well, you know, he also said something about kind of like that in the press conference with her just standing there looking at him like he is crazy. And, oh, man. And he, what about the joke about wiretapping?
Yeah, that was pretty awkward, too.
Oh, jeez, come on. All of that in, what, a 15 or 20-minute period?
Yeah.
That man has the ability to provoke more international incidents in the short amount of time than the human flash does. That's amazing. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah,
you know,
one thing I do think, I think he forgets that a lot of these world leaders had good relations and probably on a personal level liked President Obama. And so when you
pictures of Chancellor Merkel with Obama, with President Obama, are amazing. You know, they're laughing and smiling and obviously have a rapport that is, you know, completely missing from any rapport. Now, it could be that was later in his presidency, and, you know, we may see this change. I don't think so, but.
With nations you don't have, say, good working relations with, there's a certain decorum between world leaders, and it's always respected. Even in the most tense situations, we saw pictures of President Obama and Vladimir Putin, and you could tell really they were posing as if they were in some deep discussion about world events for the benefit of the people at home, for the benefit of the cameras that were taking their picture. They still did that. This guy is he's meeting contestants for his show, isn't it, Catherine, or something?
Yeah. Well, and it's not just for the view of, you know, the people at home in Russia or the people here in America. It's for global stability.
Right.
You know, it's right. Global stability that we're talking about.
Yep.
You know,
That's a good point.
If, you know, the Chinese or the Japanese or the Australians or the Canadian or whoever is watching and sees that the American president can't even have a, you know, cooperative and diplomatic relationship with Germany, who's one of our trading partners, and you know, we've worked very hard to have a, you know, good relationship with. If he can't even do that, then what does that say for them in their country, and what does it say for all of global stability? It's very it's very scary, actually. I mean, when you think about it,
absolutely,
in terms of the, you know, world leadership, it's scary.
And you know, when he makes cops about NATO, for instance, what are the other countries in Europe to think? What are the Russians to think? The people in, say, the Ukraine, what are they to think? Rescue me,
yeah,
David.
Yeah, I don't know. And the way he went about this, because I'll tell you this, I remember back in the 1992 election, the line, you know, the Cold War's over and Germany and Japan won. And, you know, a lot of the talk was, because they didn't have to pay for their defense, they could focus on industry in Japan and Germany from before the 1990s through today are economic powers. And if you wanted to have the discussion of, you know, it's been a long time since World War II, we trust you to pay for your and provide your own defense, and we want to move in some orderly fashion where you have a German army that you pay for, you know, we think that we trust your country not to have World War One or Two again. You know, that's a discussion you can have. I mean, that's something reasonable to look at. I'm not saying which way, one or the other, you can come along with, but you don't do it on Twitter, and you don't do it not shaking someone's hand and everything else.
Bathroom break. That's what I was about to say. This
yes.
is where we're learning all of our news. Worthy stuff from this president is on when he's tweeting it and some silliness that he's tweeting with it. Oh,
yeah. I mean, it's just the way he went about handling this. Well, let's get into another international incident, if you will. And of course, we've discussed in the past about Donald Trump's tweets from a few Saturdays ago where he accused President Obama of wiretapping him, apparently possibly according to one of his staffers, I'm not sure if it was Conway or Spicer, through the microwave, of all things. And then as he was, all this got to be talked about, it was said that the British may have helped him, President Obama, that is. And now the American government has had to issue an apology, United Kingdom, that we do not believe that the British government was helping tap into the phones with 1P or 2Ps, you know, a private citizen at the time, Donald Trump. Catherine, how embarrassing is this?
It's horrifying. I'm speechless, which you know how rare that is. our relationship with the British is really tenuous at this point between his, you know, demands about not being lectured by Prince Charles and this phone tapping business and. You know, now they had like some big petition and all, you know, hundreds of thousands of people said they didn't want him to come there. It's just, you know, I don't know what to think.
Look,
yeah,
David,
Tim, your thoughts.
I mean, this starts with our good friend Judge Napolitano on Fox News, saying that he has it from three credible sources, which, of course, he does not name, that...
Three sources, all named Steve Bannon.
Yeah, that the GCHQ, which is the British Intelligence Services, kind of like our NSA, President Obama requested that they spy on Donald Trump, and so they did before the election. And even, you know, Shep Smith and one of the other announcers on Fox News on the very next show said, you know, this is uncorroborated, what, you know, Judge Napolitano said, because he's known to just come out and say things like this. with no corroborating evidence. That's in the common affliction lately. And the next thing we know, Donald Trump is taking it as the gospel and running with it from the fake news, right, guys? And to make things worse, 2 days ago it was reported in the wire services what? That our government had apologized to Great Britain. And yesterday the White House said, oh, no, there hasn't been any apology. We have nothing to apologize for. And the British, in the meantime, are calling the claims just apparently ridiculous. How does the President of the United States enrage the Australians and the British? I can understand getting North Korea mad at you, maybe, but the Australians and the British? This is a fantasy world this guy's living in. Does he really seriously think President of the United States authorized the intelligence services from Britain to come over here and spy on a major party nominee? I mean, does he really think that? I guess he does.
Because it's the crazy thing is, wouldn't the president, if he wanted to do it, couldn't he direct his own NSA? But then, of course, the NSA that now Donald Trump's in control of has refuted the report. So maybe he figures if he can throw it off in another country, then
he
can't direct
them to tell the truth
and release the records.
Yeah, President Obama did all this. He didn't do a very good job of it since Donald Trump is in the White House now, did he?
No. And to me, and I love to always send y'all, I've sent you little snapshots of it, type the headlines to you of the National Enquirer. And we know how crazy and outlandish that publication is. But we have a president who tweets things that look like headlines off of the National Enquirer. That's how skewed it is. I mean, this is not somebody believing one legitimate media source over another. This is someone that, you know, believes in essentially like tabloid journalism. I mean, Catherine,
what do you
if I'm
think
not
mistaken,
he does? Send y'all a stamp. What do you mean? What do you think he does?
I was just going to ask both of y'all. What do you think he does? Do you think he surfs for this stuff, trolls for it, until he finds stuff that looks good to him, stuff that's in his wheelhouse that he agrees with, and then just runs with it?
I think he looks at about three or four different places. You know, he goes to like Newsmax and Breitbart and Fox and maybe the Enquirer. That might be a regular place. And then when he finds something, he tweets it.
Yeah, I don't even know if we can lay the craziest stuff like the wiretapping even on Fox. Even they have too much journalistic integrity for this wiretapping business. That's it, you know.
That probably came from Newsmax. That sounds like a Newsmax thing to me.
But the
or straight up the Enquirer.
The thing is, the news division people, Smith and those people, discounted this story on Fox. And Trump went with it. Oh.
Well, he's the president. He knows more than they do.
Well, if he actually used presidential sources, it'd be one thing, but we know he watches and reads articles right off the internet like every other American citizen could, and then tweets it out like it's some big revelation. I mean, that's the craziest thing. And before Lowell comes on, let's try to get squeeze one more in. North Korea. He was tweeting about North Korea. Now, there's a logical bunch of folks, the Uns. You know, that's sound thinkers there. Tim, give us a short version before we bring Lowell on the UNs and
well,
North Korea.
Well, he says, and I quote, North Korea is behaving very badly. They have been playing the United States for years, and China has done little to help. At the same time he's doing that, there's Secretary of State Tillerson over there in the Far East, and what is he doing but doubling down on that very same line of stuff in his press conference, almost daring North Korea to blink so that, you know, like, we'll take care of you, and China saying, wait a minute here, you know.
And we know there's a link between North Korea and Donald Trump, and that they both have a special relationship with one Dennis Rodman. So, you know, Dennis Rodman, I believe, was on The Celebrity Apprentice twice, and he went over and did some type of basketball tour in North Korea and made a documentary about it, which was completely edited and approved by North Korea. I actually saw part of it. It was one of the strangest things I've ever seen. But right now, let's kind of pull back from the international talk and come back home and let our guest join us from Virginia, Mr. Lowell Feld. Welcome, Lowell.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Going good.
I wasn't sure I called it to the right.
We're trying to bring it back for the international talk. We wanted to do that before you came on, and then we wanted to get into some regular national talk. And then first thing, the biggest issue of probably the last 2 or 3 weeks has been the health care policy. How's that playing in Virginia and in general, since you're so close to D.C., what is your general thoughts on how that's going to affect the electoral landscape in the near future?
I think if you look at the polling, it's not playing well across the country. It's not playing well in Virginia either. Even Trump supporters, I don't think, are super enthused about Trump care, Ryan care, whatever. What's amazing is that they're surprised. Like, I mean, really, guys? What did you think you voted for exactly? But you've got conservative groups running TV ads now, or a conservative group. I think it's American Action Network or something like that, in which they're asking you to call and thank your congressman or congresswoman for supporting this Ryan Care, whatever you want to call it. So we've got one ad running on TV here for Barbara Comstock, who's a congresswoman from the 10th Congressional District in Northern Virginia. So I think it's, you know, and it will be interesting to see what she does if she ends up sort of more distancing herself from it. We've had a couple, actually three, I guess, Virginia members of Congress, Republicans, already have distanced themselves or even said they will not vote for it. And this is from two are from the right, kind of like it doesn't go far enough. I mean, it's not evil enough, okay? and then the other one is sort of like, well, I don't like it because it's, you know, a lot of my constituents will lose coverage, I guess, and it's not I'm not even sure what his explanation was, but that was Rob Whitman, the last guy who's not, I guess, they're all to me right wing, but he's not as far right as the other ones. But anyway, so how it's going to play out? I mean, if this thing goes down in flames, I mean, there's talk that Trump's whole agenda goes down. I mean, he'll be severely weakened. That was the thing more than anything. Maybe build the wall during the campaign. What did he talk about? Build the wall. Mexico's going to pay for it. Well, forget that. Mexico's not paying for it. And then the other thing was get rid of Obamacare on day one or whatever, right? So, I mean, I think you could see a weakened and less popular, you know, Trump. And then how does that – I think that affects politics across the country when you have a leader of the Republican Party that's not, you know, if he's – you know, his current approval rating today in Gallup was 37.58. That's not good.
No.
I mean, you know, this is the honeymoon period.
Negative 21 negative. Yeah, that's the worst of his presidency, negative 21. So, yeah, he's going to become a drag. Well, I don't want to ask all the questions. I'm going to go ahead and pass it to Catherine, then Tim, and then bring it back to me. Catherine?
Thanks so much for being on with us tonight, Lowell. We were looking, we've been looking forward to it all week.
Sure, cool.
So what is the sort of general sense of what's happening in Washington, in Virginia? Like, what, I mean, obviously the health care bill is a nightmare, but how is the general, you know, sort of, you know, how are people feeling about it? Because, like David said, you have the, you know, you have the luxury of being both a nice, you know, Virginia state, but also being so close to Washington. So what's the mood?
Yeah, well, that, you know, it's a luxury in a way when the federal government is functional and when it's spending money and when it's, you know, it's, the agencies are working and everything's going. And great, because we have a huge federal workforce here in Virginia, not just in Northern Virginia, but definitely certainly in Northern Virginia, but also in the Hampton Roads area, which is heavy military, naval base. Now, military spending might, you know, increase significantly. We'll see. But so that could help, you know, in a place like the Hampton Roads area. We have the Pentagon up here in, you know, in Arlington. But as far as all the other agencies, I mean, I think federal workers right now are very, very worried, and rightfully so. I mean, we're talking about, if you look at Trump's budget, I don't think it's going to pass like that exact, maybe hopefully none of it will pass, but what he proposed was draconian cuts in all the parts of the federal budget that aren't increasing. You know how that works, you know, and then don't drive the deficit at all. But from the EPA to the Department of State to you know, health and human service, Meals on Wheels. I mean, Meals on Wheels, like, it's a few million dollars a month, or tens of millions of dollars a month. It's nothing in a trillion-dollar federal budget. But anyway, so I think the
mood
is...
And it's also really cheap.
Yeah.
I mean, aside from how much it costs, like, all the deliveries are done by volunteers.
Right.
And it's one of the best community-building programs in the country because it builds... relationships between these volunteers and these shut-ins, and it's, you know, check-ins. I mean, it's like, got so many benefits. It's so
right for very little money. But,
yeah,
but this is, you know,
money.
But this is the mentality. I mean, they're like, you know, there's no proof that it's working. What? So anyway, getting back to how people are feeling, I think federal workers and anyone who's has any connection whatsoever to the government, which is a huge percentage of it's a large percentage of Virginia's population and a huge percentage in Northern Virginia, whether they're federal contractors, military, civilian, whatever, are very concerned. And then this could really, really hurt Virginia's economy. If you really saw this kind of cuts that Trump's proposing, I mean, Terry McAuliffe, our governor, is quite concerned. He's expressed it that this could hit Virginia hard, and a lot of the localities are worried. A lot of the counties, Fairfax County, Arlington County, you know, a lot of the places are very concerned about this. So, you know, you also have things like Metro, which is vital, Metro Rail, which is vital to the D.C. metro region and, receives money from the federal government. What's going to happen if that's cut? Or the Purple Line up in Maryland. You know, there's just a million projects and the Chesapeake Bay, we're going to maybe talk about it later, but cleanup of the Chesapeake Bay, slashing that funding. I mean,
yeah, that was
just
shocking.
So, yeah, a lot of people are, and I think Trump supporters even maybe now are getting worried too, because they, a lot of the, and I mean, I always felt they voted against their self-interest, but I mean, now they're seeing it. I mean, they have health care. A lot of these people have health care thanks to quote-unquote Obamacare. And now they could lose it. Great.
Right,
know?
And also
so,
I think that, I mean, I think that article that we'll talk about later, but I think that people don't understand the connections between, like, the EPA and the Agriculture Department and Health and Human Services, the connections between those services and small, medium, and large companies
mm-hmm.
in the country. You know, that while it looks like we're just throwing money at, you know, poor people, God forbid we do that, but we're also funding organizations and companies that provide those services and and you know, and restaurants who rely on clean water and, you know, agricultural stimulants and all kinds of things. And I think that if, you know, Trump made that statement, who knew that healthcare was so complicated? Well, everybody but you.
Yeah, everyone.
But, I mean,
literally
I think,
everyone.
Yeah, I think that that's these are some realizations that people are going to be coming to that, oh, yeah, there is a connection between all these things and my company. Like, like I
and,
sell
you know,
light bulbs, and now I, you know, there was that whole light bulb thing a few years ago. I sell light bulbs, and now I can't sell these light bulbs. But those kind of things are like, you know, I mean, they seem small, but they do have an impact on businesses. And I don't know what it means. I don't know how we can stop it, but.
Right. You also have the crackdown on. You also have the crackdown on undocumented immigrants, and there is a large population of Latinos, and including undocumented immigrants in Virginia. So they're also, I'm sure, you know, I know they're very concerned. So you know, and then
and so are the construction
I mean,
companies that hire them.
Right, and that too. Right, and then you know, as for the economic impact of clean water and on tourism and aquaculture and fisheries and all that stuff, which is that's also big business. So yeah, I mean it's crazy, and I don't think everyone, I don't think people are in a great mood right now. Let's just summarize it
yes,
like that.
I think you're right.
Yeah,
I'm gonna pass to Tim. Maybe he'll have a high point for us.
Yeah, really, we need it.
I'm not sure about a high point, but once more to the breach we go, Lowell, right? You mentioned Barbara Comstock, and as luck would have it was about her that I was going to ask my first question of you tonight. It's a two-parter, actually. I mean, if the Democrats have any chance of making up a lot of ground in the House next year, much less taking it back, then Barbara Comstock up there in the 10th district should be like a prime target. I think she won her last race by like 6 points in a district that Hillary Clinton carried. So the first question, is she a prime target? And the second part of that question, what about the rumors that she might vacate the seat in order to run against Tim Kaine?
Yeah, on the second part, I had heard those rumors for a long time. I was basically assuming that she would run for U.S. Senate, and I think a lot of people were. But I've heard in the last few months that maybe not. So I don't know. We'll see. There are other potential Republican candidates being bandied about, like Laura Ingraham. How do you pronounce her name? Great. And Carly Fiorina, who actually lives in Virginia now. And we can bring back, remember the ad, her TV ad, the demon sheep? I don't know if you remember that thing when she ran in California. Wait, I'm getting psyched for this, man. You know, remember, I'm a blogger, so I love this kind of stuff. I want demon sheep next year. That's what I'm looking forward to. I'm like salivating over demon sheep, you know. But anyway, and then not to eat them or anything. I'm a vegetarian. So that's another story. Then we got E.W. Jackson. Remember that guy? Crazy old E.W.
Yeah.
He might run. He might run for U.S. Senate next year. So we have three other potential crazy, whatever you want to call them, Republicans to run against Tim Kaine. Now, I would think Tim Kaine's got to be kind of happy right now with Trump at 37.58 and with Comstock maybe saying, you know what, not a good year to run. And with maybe facing, Carly Fiorina, E.W. Jackson, or Laura Ingraham. I mean, you know, that's like feeling a lot better. I mean, nothing's a given, of course, and all this could change. But yeah, so I think the 10th, I've heard rumors of up to 10, 12 candidate potential Democrats. This is crazy. Like, people are coming out of the woodwork to run as Democrats.
We have 18 candidates in Tom Price's district, 11 Republicans, 5 Democrats, and 2 Independents.
Isn't that wild?
It's
crazy.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So you know, anyway, Comstock's going to definitely face a serious challenge next year. I wrote about this the other day. One, there are actually a couple times. One candidate potentially is a state senator, Jennifer Wexton, who's been apparently being recruited by the DCCC. And then there are several other potential candidates, a member of the Fairfax County Board of Supervisors, Kathy Smith, and then maybe I actually talked to a woman the other night at Representative Connolly's St. Patrick's Day event, which is always fun. And she told me she might be running. I can't say her name because she said she's not ready to go public yet. But there are a lot of potential Democrats for next year. And then, of course, this year, we can get to that. But there are a ton of people, of Democrats, throwing their hats in the ring.
So the long and short of that is, yes, the DCCC is going to heavily target that district then.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, well, they did last time, and I think next year is going to even maybe be more favorable for Democrats than even presidential.
Let me throw one more at you, and then I'll throw it back to David. You know, it seems like about every time that you and I talk, Lowell, the conversation at some point turns to our old buddy Ed Gillespie. How do I put that?
Speak for yourself.
Almost getting elected to something, but not quite.
Barely. Oh.
Why,
poor guy.
Electorally speaking only now, do you think he has not yet gotten over the hump in Virginia, statewide?
Well, I'm a little biased against Ed Gillespie, but he's only run once. I mean, so when, you know, I mean, and that was against Mark Warner. It's actually amazing how close he came to beating Mark Warner. So, of course, that was somewhat of a tough year, 2014, for Democrats. It was one of those midterm elections when we have a Democrat in the White House, so all of our people. What do? They stay home, of course. God forbid they come out and vote. Anyway, so, but yeah, so he ran once and he barely lost. So no, I don't think he was tarnished by that, actually. I think he was, if anything, his stature rose. And I think this time around, it looks like he's going to, unless something drastically changes, he's going to win that nomination, I think, easily. I mean, he's got two opponent Republican, you know, other contenders for that nomination, and they don't seem to be gaining any traction whatsoever.
Well,
now, you know, so then it will be him versus either Ralph Northam or Tom Perriello for governor this year.
And this is where we get to my almost thing that I was talking about, because I've seen some early polling. And it's almost even with these guys, but not quite. 4, 5, 6 points down. You know, the bridesmaid at the wedding or something.
Yeah.
And I just wonder if he has some sort of ceiling that he personally just can't top.
Yeah. I mean, I don't – again, I think he did, you know, quite well when he ran against Mark Warner. I think it's Virginia. I mean, Virginia seems to be in the, you know, I mean, Obama won Virginia by 6 points and 4 points, and Hillary won it by 5. So that seems to be, you know, somewhere around 4, 5, 6 points seems to be pretty much like the generic. If you just ran generic D against generic R, it would probably be 4, 5, 6 point win for the generic D. But, you know, so let's say you have – let's say Gillespie is generic R. I mean, I get he's generic corrupt R, whatever he is. But, well, I guess that's somewhat –
American corrupt, go with the R's now.
Yeah. But anyway, and then let's say we have, you know, Ralph Northam or Tom Perriello. I'm not saying they're generic, but whatever you want to call them. But, you know, I mean, I don't see any particular – and then with the president at 37-58. Now, that could change. But if he's very unpopular, I think it's not Gillespie per se, though, is what I'm saying. Not that I have any reason to, you know, cut him any slack or anything. I can't stand the guy, but I don't think it's him really. I think it's the fundamentals of the state and also of the country and where we're at right now. I think this actually bodes well potentially for Democrats in the U.S. Senate, you know, next year. And also for governor in New Jersey and Virginia this year. So, you know, but so in a way, it's weird. We want Trump kind of to go away. We want him impeached or whatever on the one hand. But in another way, I want him to stay around. Because as long as you have a president who's really unpopular like that, we could have a wave, a Democratic. Wow. We could. I mean, the potential is there for a Democratic wave. So,
Catherine, I did get us to a high point.
A Democratic wave.
I'm going to pass her to David.
Yeah, that was skillful.
Yes.
Good job. Good job.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about another thing in Virginia that made you. It's been over a week ago, but Donald Trump visited the coastal area of Virginia, went to a naval base, and apparently etiquette dictates that you invite a congressman or congressperson of that district, and he didn't even mention to Bobby Scott that he was coming and didn't invite Bobby Scott. How much attention is that getting in average Virginia media? I know it got a lot of attention in the political media, but what about just in Virginia?
Yeah, I don't think it got a lot of – and the average person probably has very little idea about that because Bobby Scott didn't make a huge, to-do about it. He could have, but he really didn't. I don't know if it's just not his style or what, but I know I got the message from more insider-type people that he wasn't pleased. Now, why would he be? I mean, he got – I mean, not personally, I wouldn't want to be with Donald Trump anywhere, but, but it was a major event in his district. His district employs a lot of, there are a lot of military, there's a major, naval base and shipyards and all that stuff there, Newport News, shipbuilding, and Trump was on giving a speech on the Gerald R. Ford aircraft carrier in front of 4,200 sailors and civilians. So, to not invite the guy who's represented that district for decades is an African American too, by the way. It's really it's typical Trump. I was trying to come up with an adjective, but I'm just like, it's Trump. That's what it is. It's Trump to a T. That's what he does, right? What adjectives?
Yeah,
I've run out of adjectives.
What made it more troubling is, the high point of the Trump presidency was the speech he gave on the – I know it was a Tuesday night. I guess it's been over 2 weeks ago now, and people fawned all over it because he, made complete sentences. But in that speech, he talked about how we got to work together, reconciliation. And this was later that same week in which he didn't invite Bobby Scott. It was kind of like – actions speak louder than words in this case.
Well, yeah. Although this gets back to the debate about Trump, whether we should take him literally or seriously or neither or both or something. I'm so confused. Should we listen to his words or should we watch his actions or neither or what? I don't know.
Thought says a complete sentence, we should expect that week a complete action on the words, and we didn't get it. He didn't follow through. Another topic I want to talk to you about, and that was talking about some of these cuts that Donald Trump's making and how they impact real world things and even job creation. And apparently, I didn't know much about this, but I don't live up in the Chesapeake Bay area. They were the EPA was helping clean up the Chesapeake Bay, hoping to revive the oyster industry, which then would have provided a lot of jobs. I mean, these wouldn't be super skilled, graduate school type jobs. These would just be regular jobs that you could get some training on how to, do things in aquatics, maneuvering a boat, harvesting the oysters, things like that.
Yeah, aquaculture.
It'd be a new source of income. Well, Donald Trump's new budget will cut that program, and therefore if the Chesapeake Bay is not as clean, and I'm sure there's many, many other benefits to that, this oyster industry won't regain its robustness, if you will. What do you know about that?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the Chesapeake Bay, used to be an incredible, oyster and crab and just everything, incredibly abundant. And then pollution and runoff and a lot of things really almost killed the bay. And over the last few decades, the EPA working with the states and other groups like the Chesapeake Bay Foundation, and this is also the Great Lakes, by the way, and it's not just the Chesapeake Bay, but anyway, we'll stick to the bay for now. It has been coming back, but slowly. But as actually under the Obama administration, I would say it accelerated, and the comeback's been better. The grasses, the underwater grasses, are growing again. The oysters are starting to thrive again, and those oysters, on top of being a great source of income for watermen and other people in aquaculture, they also filter pollutants out of the bay, and they clean the bay. They make the water clear instead of like dirty, basically. And they can help bring back the bay in and of themselves. So there are lots of benefits. It's a no-brainer, really, to continue cleaning up the bay. It's been a success story, and you know it could end up being a great success story, but not if Trump gets his way. I mean, yet again, when and why? I mean, why would you do, like, it just seems gratuitous to me, like cutting Meals on Wheels or whatever. Why would you do that? It's not helping with the debt or the deficit or anything. It's just hurting people. In this case with the Chesapeake Bay, it's hurting people. It's hurting the environment. It's crazy. So, yeah, I mean, but, yeah, it has been making progress, and the Chesapeake Bay is a huge source of recreation, of fisheries, of tourism, of you just name it. And the more it comes back, the better that gets. So, right, why would you not want to do that? I mean, you have to get inside of Trump's brain, his orange skin, and then inside the brain. You know, I don't want to go there. You can go there. You get paid the big bucks to do that, okay? So you go try to psychoanalyze that guy. I can't
figure
it out.
Yeah, it just makes no sense. I mean, this is a guy that talks about, oh, I'm going to bring jobs back to the average man and woman, and this is a case where it was already getting done. Just continue it on and then steal the credit
right. When
it happens. And they,
exactly.
You know, obliterated it. And it would have affected Virginia, Maryland, I guess maybe Delaware would have had some impact from it, D.C.
Right. Well, definitely,
you know,
Maryland.
It's the win for that region of the country. Well, Lowell, we thank you for coming on the Kudzu Vine, and keep up the good work at Blue Virginia. As always, just in case somebody hadn't heard some of the other podcasts, how can people read your work?
They can go to bluevirginia.us. And check out Blue Virginia. We have while you're there, you can get subscribe to the Twitter feed or the Facebook or whatever as well. So I'll spare you those addresses right now. But bluevirginia.us is the URL of the blog. So check it out, and if you want to know more about Virginia politics.
Yeah. Well, thanks again for being on.
Thanks so much, Paul.
All right. Take care, guys.
Thank you, sir.
Good night.
Yep. Absolutely. Bye.
Yes. That was Lowell Fell, Blue Virginia. Also, if you go there to Blue Virginia, his Twitter feed is one of the better ones. Always picking up stuff, not just from Virginia, but really some good analysis on the nation as a whole. Well, let's kind of turn to another topic that's sort of related. And this is how in recent, really weeks and certainly days, a lot of media sources are picking up on the fact that Trump and the GOP agenda is going to hurt Republican Trump voters more than anyone else. If you look at those counties that trended harder for Trump, that they're impacted by the health care bill, they're impacted by the Meals on Wheels. In fact, the Charleston, West Virginia paper actually did a front page story talking about exactly how much West Virginia state would lose. West Virginia, if there's one state that epitomizes the Trump-based voter, it is West Virginia. But kudos to the Charleston paper. I believe it has Gazette in the title. Somebody can add to that for me. They really, showed the people of West Virginia, I mean, this is what you voted for. You may like it. You may not have wanted all that spending, but this is what you're going to get. Tim, how much do you think that this average Trump voter that's on the economic edge that really got more government services than they thought. How much do you think this is starting to sink in for them?
I'm not sure it's hit them quite yet. You might recall, David, that you sent Catherine and I a graphic earlier this week that showed the percentages of cuts in his budget proposal to, I believe it was 10 major programs, by anywhere from, as I recall, 13.2% up to 31.4% with the EPA. What's going to happen with a lot of people, not only in West Virginia and Appalachia, but people all over, are going to get hit about 10 different ways from Saturday. For starters, look at their health care. 20-some-odd million people. Not only are they possibly going to lose their health care, the average person on a private plan, we all know that statistics show that Obamacare being part of the mix has slowed down the rate of increase of premiums. Imagine if that accelerated. You know, that's going to hit everybody. Think about Medicaid. Think about going to block grants instead of what we now do and say your state runs out of money in September and there's no more money for it the rest of the year. Or think about Georgia, a state that didn't accept the Medicaid expansion and wouldn't get as much money in those block grants as a state like Kentucky that did. Think about the state of West Virginia. When Robert Byrd was in Congress, he was called the King of the Road. And that was because in his position, he got all kind of road building projects in that state. We had some of the best highways in the United States, and it provided commerce, it provided jobs, it provided a lot to that poor state. Imagine if all that's gone. Yeah, these people are going to get hit every way you can imagine, aren't they, Catherine?
Yes. It's the Gazette Mail, the Charleston Gazette Mail is the name of the paper, just FYI.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're going to get hit every way, and these are, like David pointed out in the introduction, these are the people that voted for Trump.
Right.
I don't know if I'm not sure, so much that we have so much time before anybody can sort of vote on their opinion of Trump, whether it's in the midterms or the 2020 general again. But as their fortunes fade in these states, and especially I think in these rural areas where Trump got so much support, where they're really going to feel some of this these budget cuts, it'll be interesting to see if there's how it works out. Like if the budget passes in some fashion. The way it looks now, though, I think it's going to be pretty tough to get that budget through. But if some of those cuts are kept in the new budget, it's going to take a while for that to sort of trickle down and affect people. It'll be interesting to see the impact of that on the midterms and then on the 2020 general.
Mm-hmm. Well, David, let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a question, David. If Donald Trump continues to languish, and another graphic you sent us today, which is the Gallup daily tracking poll, if he stays in the 30s, is he not going to have any political capital in Congress to enact any of his craziness?
Yeah, that's what you got to wonder. I mean, this is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the sixth straight day, double digit, underwater, if you will, where the negative number is 10 or greater. It's actually 11's the best it's been in the past 6 days. And it was just up to 21. This is a rolling average. So I think tomorrow it's only going to be, it may not be more than 21. It may go back down to 17, but 17's horrible. Negative 17 is just, even negative 1 at this point in his presidency is horrible compared to other folks. And so you just have to wonder, I mean, who's falling? But this becomes, I think, a consequence of these district lines, particularly in Congress, and in some cases the states, where these Republican politicians, they have to go so far to the right to win the primary that they can't ever get back to the middle. And so, you know, they have to it's such a weird tightrope they have to walk to be able to win in their primary but then win in the general. They've managed to do it somehow. You know, midterm elections helped a lot, but then this time wasn't a midterm, and they still did quite well. But you'd have to think that 2018 and particularly 2020 is going to be really tough for them to pin this on any kind of Democratic boogeyman. I mean, we have no power. Mm-hmm. We have no face of the party to run after. I don't think President Obama is going to be anybody they can pull out after he's not in office anymore. And so, you know, like Glenn Thrush said last week, Trump in particular is the kind of politician that needs a bad guy. Well, the media is what he's going to try, but the media won't be on the ballot. And so, therefore, you think there's a reckoning coming. Catherine, do you think there's going to be a reckoning coming?
Well, I think, you know, I think it's really going to – I mean, I do, but it just depends on, you know, how the budget shakes out, what happens with the Supreme Court. I mean, there's so many things happening that you just, you know, is the wall going to get built? Is the, you know, all these things that are sort of in the works, and what's the impact going to be? And also we have, you know, a number of special elections, and what's that going to what's going to happen with those? What, you know, how is his popularity going to impact, you know, special election? I mean, there's just, I think there's a reckoning to come, but, you know, Lord knows I've been wrong a lot. So, but I think a lot's going to depend on how effective how successful he is in pushing his policies. And I don't think, I mean, from my perspective, I don't see how he can be successful, because all he can do is, like, make up this crazy budget and, you know, then tweet about it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't.
He's not really doing the work.
My party, when I still don't understand why parties, when they get power, don't find the things that everybody agrees with, but the 52, 54, 60% of the people agree with you on, pass those first, build some momentum, and then do things later on. I think in particular on the Republican side in this case, since they have the power, they have a belief system about government should be so small, government should not infringe on the people, particularly those people that have made it with money. And therefore, they want to reduce taxes very low. I don't know why, since they have the power, why don't they just forget it, not care, pass what they want to pass, and if it's unpopular, you do it. Mick Mulvaney today, you know, talked about, oh, you can't get everybody to be on universal health care. Well, we know from other countries and other programs in our country, that's just not true. But they don't want to give people health care. So don't try to pass your own bill. Just repeal Obamacare. Throw people off of health care if that's how you feel. Now, if the American people say that's horrible, they will vote you out. But at least you will have had your Ayn Rand vision of what you think. Tim, I think you like that Nick Mulvaney quote real well too, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. Really, really, really loved it, especially with something like health care, when the rollout of that thing was just a debacle. Doesn't it amaze you guys that they had 7 years, years to come up with something, and this is what they come up with, which means they had nothing all along, doesn't it?
Right. Well, that's exactly what I'm saying. They don't want to have anything all along. They want you to get your own private insurance. It's your own job. And pay whatever premiums, and that's just what they believe. Well, if that's believed, that's fine. And if the American people don't believe it, then you will be in the minority. Somehow through smoke and mirrors, you're in the majority, because based on all the polling we see, there's not a ton of issues in which, when it's asked as an issue question, the American people agree with the Republicans. Catherine?
Right.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Absolutely true. The latest Kaiser poll says that 75% of Americans, not Democrats, not Republicans, 75% of Americans do not want to defund Planned Parenthood. 75%.
Wow.
Yeah.
And they're going to.
And that's
and
one of their big
goals. They're going to try. The other thing that I think is, I just think it's mean. Like this, the Meals on Wheels, the, you know, school lunch programs. And I love that these guys, that budget guy said, well, we don't have any evidence that feeding kids at school makes them perform any better. And I'm like, well, just talk to a teacher, right, David? Like,
yes,
what more
and
evidence
there are
do you need?
Studies.
Talk to a teacher.
There are studies, exactly. School breakfast, they did studies. I've seen studies. I saw the studies in the early 90s when I was going through education programs for the first time. And it's just daggum common sense. If you think Maslow's hierarchy of needs, if you're hungry, you can't think about self-actualization or increasing your knowledge. You have to put something in your stomach first. Just common sense.
Right, I mean,
a little bit of science. We know some of them are allergic
to. But the other part of this is that government is not always just about results, right? So maybe kids don't – I mean, I don't believe this. But let's say they didn't perform better if they were hungry – if they were not hungry than if they were hungry. The point is children should not be hungry in this country. They shouldn't
That's
be
right.
hungry. So whether they perform better or not, that's not the point. The point is they shouldn't be hungry. We should feed them. Like it's
that's right.
We should feed them. We should feed old people.
Absolutely.
We should check
Absolutely.
In on old people and make sure they're okay.
Amen. Amen. Preach it,
yeah.
sister.
I mean,
right.
It's not all about the bottom line results. It's about being a kind, gentle, generous country to our people.
Yeah.
To the very least of us is what, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, they didn't read that part of the Bible.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, actually,
or they forgot that part of the Bible.
There's a tweet about Matthew 25, which talks about the least of these. Google it, because I'll misquote not Matthew 25, but the actual what he interpreted it to be. But it wasn't any interpretation I've ever read, so Google that one up. Well, folks, we've gone a little over, but I hope y'all don't mind. But we'll be back next week with the Kudzu Vine.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
With a strong